Greetings. Welcome. It is Eric Erickson here. Glad to have you with me. The phone number is 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. Delighted you are here listening. We can't secure the border. You know, there had been those who wanted to send the National Guard down to secure the border, the humanitarian crisis there in Del Rio, Texas. We could send National Guard soldiers. Brian Kemp, the governor of Georgia, Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, Bill Lee, the governor of Tennessee, and several others, they have sent some of their National Guard troops to help the Texas National Guard. But the president can't send National Guard soldiers to secure the border. He's got to send them to New York to take the place of the first responders who were today fired and out of work for not getting the COVID vaccine. Last year, around the country, the media heralded healthcare workers as heroes, the first responders. They were putting their lives on the line to protect, to comfort, to assist, to heal those who got COVID. If you remember in Denver, there was a small business protest. Small businesses wanted to open back up. And the media treated as heroes the doctors who stood in the street and blocked the traffic of the protest. They were the heroes to the media. In New York and elsewhere, they did parades for the healthcare workers. They did stories on the healthcare workers who couldn't be home with their family. I remember a local story here in Georgia. It was down in Albany, Georgia, one of the hardest hit per capita areas of COVID. It began to spread at a funeral down there and killed hundreds of people in Albany, Georgia. Per capita outside of New York City, it was the hardest hit part of the country for a while. And the Atlanta Journal-Constitution did a profile of a doctor who could not go home at night. His wife had just had a baby. He didn't want to be in the house in case he was infected. And for weeks and weeks and weeks, had to find places to sleep because he didn't want to carry COVID into his house to his wife and his newborn. We didn't know at the time, you will recall, we didn't know at the beginning of COVID whether or not it would have deleterious effects on kids or not. We know it does now. There's so much we know now that we didn't know then. But one of the things that we know now is that the healthcare workers are now expendable. To hell with the goodwill for the healthcare workers. There are some healthcare workers who haven't gotten the vaccine. A lot of the healthcare workers who have not gotten the vaccine are people who previously got COVID while saving your life and mine. While working in the hospitals, caring for the patients who carried COVID into them, they got COVID, they got sick, and they fought and survived. And they were treated as heroes for risking their lives. And now they have massive antibodies against COVID. They're not going to get it again, so they haven't got the vaccine. And today they're out of jobs in New York for that. There are lots of young women in maternity wards who are nurses who have not wanted to get COVID because they are concerned for a variety of reasons. They're out of jobs in New York today. Now, how can this be? The governor of New York, through the healthcare power of the governors of the states, has tremendous power and has ordered that everyone in the healthcare field who is licensed by the state must be vaccinated. Under the emergency healthcare powers of the state of New York, the governor is legally allowed to order private hospitals. I at first thought it was only publicly funded hospitals. Everyone in the state of New York, private and public, has to get vaccinated if they work in a hospital or a nursing home. Doesn't matter if it's a private hospital. The healthcare power of the governor extends even there. And through the licensing power of the state, is revoking the licenses of those who are not vaccinated. They are being fired. The governor of the state of New York has had to call in the National Guard because they are expecting hospital shortages in parts of the state. New York City is largely not affected. The vaccine rate there is very high, but the rest of the state, they're having problems. The rest of the state is going to see healthcare shortages. Now, the argument is, well, they could get infected and infect other people. Yes, that's true. They could get infected and infect other people. Even with the vaccine, now we know they could get infected and infect other people. You know, I mean, this is the inconvenient truth of the vaccine. I am very pro-vaccine. I think everyone should get the vaccine. I got the vaccine. My wife did. My wife's even got the booster. My kids have both been vaccinated. I will get the booster soon if I can. I support it. I support your right to decide for yourself what you want to do. But here's the inconvenient truth of the vaccine. You can still get COVID, particularly if you the Pfizer and J&J. I know a couple of people now who have gotten the virus after getting the Moderna vaccine, but overwhelmingly it's Pfizer and J&J. It's kind of interesting to me. At the beginning, there was the whole Pfizer thing. People actually, there was a slew of people who got the Pfizer logo tattooed on themselves. They were so proud of getting that vaccine. And Moderna works better. But even the Moderna, you can still get COVID. So let's follow this out here. They want the doctors and nurses to get the vaccine. If they get the vaccine, they can still get COVID and transmit it to their patients. Now, to be fair, the risk is far less. In fact, it's 1 in 5,000 people. 1 in 5,000 people will get COVID after getting the vaccine. You may know someone who had, I know several people who have. It seems like it's got to be like 1 in 100, but it's 1 in 5,000, according not just to the CDC, not just to the FDA, to a lot of outside groups that have studied this. It's 1 in 5,000. They branded it badly. It's funny. Someone just texted me this. They branded it badly. It's not a vaccine in that it gives you full immunity. You should probably have called it an inoculation. It certainly mitigates. If you do get the virus, it mitigates the damage you could have. It makes it less likely that you'll wind up in the hospital. It makes it less likely that you'll wind up dying. In fact, overwhelmingly, the people who are going and being hospitalized who have gotten the vaccine are people who are elderly or have serious comorbidities, people who are morbidly obese. But why are we firing the doctors and the nurses who don't want to get it? Because they could still get it if they were vaccinated. Less of a chance for sure, but they can still get it and pass it on. Why are we causing now a healthcare crisis in this country? Why are we willing to punish the people who put their lives on the line? I mean, again, they can still get COVID. I don't understand why they're willing to cause a healthcare crisis in New York. I don't understand why they're willing to cause a medical shortage. And by the way, there are southern states that aren't putting these mandates in at hospitals. And maybe the South will benefit. Maybe the South will benefit. Maybe those states, now there are some hospitals here in Georgia, most of the hospitals in the state have mandated the vaccine. And I think a private business that wants to mandate the vaccine, I think there are ways to encourage it without mandating it, but it's their right to mandate. I really don't think the states or the federal government should be mandating it. And I would also point out, where is Joe Biden's mandate? Notice how his coming out and making the mandate changed the conversation. People stopped talking about Afghanistan. People stopped talking about the errant bombing that was supposedly blowing up a terrorist, but actually blew up a civilian worker for an American nonprofit. Where's the Biden mandate? It hasn't come down from OSHA. It sounded like it was imminent. It sounded like he was going to make him do it. Maybe it was just a conversation changer. Maybe it was never actually meant to be legit. Maybe, possibly. I don't know. But it hasn't come, has it? I mean, there are a lot of Republican governors willing to file suit pretty quickly to stop the mandate, and yet the mandate has never been put in writing. Joe Biden, you got to understand this. The president of the United States can give a speech and say, I'm going to mandate that every worker in every company of 100 employees or more be forced to get the COVID vaccine or lose their jobs. He can give that speech, but if he hasn't put it in writing in the form of an executive order or a regulation, his speech doesn't have any bearing on it. They can't govern with his speech. It's got to be put in writing in proper form for the bureaucrats to be able to enforce. He's never done that. Where is it? When is it coming? Will it come when they need a new distraction? The generals today who oversaw Afghanistan, we'll get into this, they're testifying before Congress directly contradicting the things the president of the United States said to the public about withdrawing from Afghanistan under oath. They are saying they advised the president of the United States to keep a force inside Afghanistan and to not withdraw when he withdrew, directly contradicting what the president of the United States told us. So I expect the COVID protocol for vaccine mandates will come out tomorrow to distract us yet again. And then it will be enjoined by a court and will wind its way through the judicial system over the next several years. And they'll use it as a distraction. It really is remarkable. He gave that whole speech, got everyone to stop talking about Afghanistan. And yet, where's the regulation? It's not in writing anywhere. They haven't drawn it up. I guess now they will, as another distraction from Afghanistan. But in New York, there's now a healthcare crisis. Doctors and nurses quitting in rural parts of the state because they themselves did not get the COVID vaccine, and now they're being fired under orders of the governor of the state of New York. We can't send our National Guard troops to secure the border because they got to go secure hospitals in New York City because the first responders who were heroes last year are now the villains. What was the line from The Dark Knight? Die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain? Yep. Those healthcare responders, they couldn't get the fawning profiles of a life expired because of COVID. They've had to survive and keep helping people. And because they've stayed alive and they've kept helping people and they have the natural immunity and they don't need the vaccine, now they're the bad guys, according to the press and the governor of New York. If you are a regular listener of this here program, you know my quest for the perfect mattress. I finally found one after multiple iterations. And then, of course, you got to get the perfect sheets to go with the mattress. I mean, you need quality sheets. Well, that's why Bull and Branch is right for you. You know, there's a great, great, great company out there. They're highly entrepreneurial and they make high quality sheets, the highest quality. It makes the world a better place when you're sleeping under high quality sheets on a great mattress, and you need Bull and Branch to go with your mattress. They are soft. They've got that weighted feel, but they're also very, very soft. They're very comfortable. You sleep cool, but you also feel like you have something on you. Like, I can't sleep in super light sheets, and the Bowl and Branch, they are the perfect purpose balance. My wife loves them. I love them. They're super soft. They're high quality. And you know what? You'll sleep well at night with them. You'll also, you know, for some reason, the Bowl and Branch, it's the sheen on them. You don't get tangled up in the covers at night, which is also great. So I highly recommend Bowl and Branch. You can try them worry-free for 30 nights if you don't believe me. You get free shipping and returns. Now, my listeners get 15% off your first set of sheets with promo code ERICK, E-R-I-C-K, at BowlandBranch.com. That's Bowl and Branch, B-O-L-L, and Branch.com. The promo code is ERICK. Sleep comfortably with Bowl and Branch. You won't get tangled up under the covers. They give you a little weight. They're the perfect set of sheets to go with your mattress. Hi there. It is Eric Erickson here. The phone number is 877-973-7425. If you want to be a part of the program, let's go back to the phones. Mark, you are going to be up on the program next if I can push the button. There we go. Mark, welcome.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I would like to make point that the doctors and nurses are leaving because of the fact that they know that the spike can be hijacked. It could be put on another virus, just like it was put on the coronavirus, and then your body think it's a coronavirus, and it's a Trojan horse, and it takes you out without your body even realizing it. So it's not a perfect method, first of all. Second of all, the Democrats are creating order out of chaos from the old Albert Pike theories from Morals and Dogma, his book he wrote, where you would create so many fires like the immigration down there in Texas. Then you've got the coronavirus, then you've got the crashing economy, then you've got, you know, got to raise the debt ceiling, then you got Afghanistan. We all see that's very obvious. So we have a lot of these different fires going on all at once, and they want to bring in the order, and they're going to bring in martial law one day.
Well, look, I'm skeptical the Democrats can bring in martial law, and keep in mind that's what they say about the Republicans. They say Donald Trump and the Republicans want martial law. I don't think they are. I think what they're doing is they're trying to create so many fires. You're right about this. They're creating a bunch of controversies. They're creating a bunch of crises because they have internalized that the only way to get things done in Washington now is to create crisis. It's very much like the climate change people. The climate change people, we got 10 years, we got 9 years, we got 12 years, we got 5 years, we got 20 years. Who cares? It's a crisis. We're all going to die. And unless people internalize it, nobody's going to do anything for climate change. I've got a buddy of mine who was a climate change skeptic. He's come around to the idea that climate change is real. Mankind has a strong role, it is partly natural, but also we amplify it, but that it's not nearly as bad as what they say, that your standard scientists and the media outlets say, and yet the media outlets and the scientists must scare you and commit to it being a crisis or you'll do nothing. And in fact, we can probably do nothing and it'll mitigate itself. We can adapt to it. They've got to create crises, not for martial law. They got to create crises for the Republicans to help them do something. And the Republicans aren't going along. The Republicans aren't taking the bait. And, you know, you got to listen. I've never been a huge Mitch McConnell fan. I actually got sidelined at Fox for a couple of years because I was so critical of McConnell. And McConnell's wife was on the board of Fox at the time and complained so much. Roger Ailes told me he couldn't put me on air because Elaine Chao was on the board and she'd give him a hard time. So he sidelined me. I'm not a huge McConnell fan, but you got to acknowledge he's got the Democrats painting themselves into a corner and he can take advantage of that. They've created a crisis and he's going to provide them an out that helps Republicans. You know, this is different from in 2013, whatever, the Ted Cruz shutdown over Obamacare and the like that got a sequestration because the Republicans aren't making any demands on the Democrats. The Republicans are just saying, you guys do this yourselves, do it in reconciliation. We're not going to give you the votes. And the Democrats think, no, you have to give us the votes. And the GOP is like, nope, ain't doing it. Not going to happen. Sorry. And when the Democrats do now not do what they should do, and they are forced to rely on Republican votes, the Republicans will extract concessions, as they should. They should get something out of it. So all of this comes because the Democrats, in large part, have bought their own press. They believe their own press. They believe the righteousness of their cause. But I would be very cautious in saying they want to impose martial law. One, I really don't think they want to, and I say that as this is what the Democrats say. The Democrats believe Republicans are trying to manufacture crises to bring about an authoritarian regime that imposes martial law. If you think that's nonsense, you should think the same thing about the claim that the Democrats want to do it. I think they do want to manufacture crises, but that's because that's how Washington has come to be governed. The Democrats, of course, have internalized the idea that the Republicans are fascist. So, of course, the Democrats want to be anti-fascist. They want to be Antifa, which itself is fascist. But we're not headed towards martial law. We're headed towards a debt ceiling. and that debt ceiling is going to be raised. The Republicans will go along with it, but they're going to make it painful for the Democrats, and that's good. When we come back, we got to focus on Virginia for a few moments. I'm on no stations in Virginia yet, but it's a national story you need to know about because it has profound consequences for the midterm elections coming up.
If you've been behind the wheel of a high-performance sports car, you realize how much better a car can be. You never want to settle for a regular car again. I feel that way with my X-Chair. From the moment I first sat down in it and I understood how many consider X-Chair to be the finest office chair in the world, can your current office chair give you a massage while you're working? My X-Chair can, and as a guy in radio who sits in this chair for 3 hours a day, plus an additional 3 hours doing show prep, I can tell you it's worth it. It can also heat up. It can cool down. That's what my X-Chair can do. I bet yours can't. It's all the Elevax massage and temperature regulation, exclusively designed and made for X-Chair. Once you feel it, once you realize the difference, you're not going to go back. You're going to want one of these. Try X-Chair yourself, risk-free for 30 days. Once you realize how much better your chair can be, you're never going to go back. I promise, I didn't, and I had a really fancy chair, and then I got my X-Chair. There's no going back. Go to xchaireric.com now with the letter X, chair, E-R-I-C-K.com, for $100 off your order. X-Chair has a 30-day guarantee of complete comfort. It's xchaireric.com. Hi there, it is Eric Erickson here, the Eric Erickson Show. Judah and the Lion, that's the music. Good, good, good group. All right, the phone number is 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. We need to talk about Virginia. Virginia has its gubernatorial election this year. Virginia has its gubernatorial elections the year after a presidential election and can be used by the media oftentimes as a barometer on the president and whether or not the president can win, whether or not the president will win, or rather the midterms, I guess I should say, whether the president's party will do well in the midterms. Barack Obama got elected. He was sworn in January 2009. In November 2009, Virginia swung towards the GOP. It was a pretty big indicator that things would be bad for the Democrats. And things were bad for the Democrats thereafter. The problem is that they kind of are self-fulfilling prophecies. In 2009, Barack Obama, having come into office, promised Obamacare, begun the debate, Cray Deeds lose to Bob McDonald. Bob McDonald won 58.6%. Won Northern Virginia, which was big because Northern Virginia since 2009 has drifted further and further to the left. It is almost impossible at this point for a Republican to win in Virginia. And I'm in the camp that were the election held today, Terry McAuliffe would beat Glenn Youngkin, the Republican hedge fund guy, private equity guy who's running. Glenn Youngkin has run a campaign on personality, not on issues. He's finally started focusing on Northern Virginia and focusing on schools and education and the lockdowns and the impact and how the teachers have screwed up, the school boards rather, not the teachers, have screwed things up. There's a level of panic coming for sure from the Democrats. In fact, a progressive group is out pretending to be a Republican group in order to try to scare Republican voters into not voting for Glenn Youngkin. That in and of itself is pretty telling as to just how bad the lay of the land is for the Democrats right now in Virginia, even as I think they're going to win. Where's the story? I had it up here just a moment ago. This is from Lachlan Markey at Axios, Dim Sneaky Sabotage. A group tied to prominent Democrat strategists is posing as a conservative outfit to try to drive a wedge between the Republican candidate for Virginia governor and his core voters, Axios has learned. The state's gubernatorial race is expected to be tight and could be a national bellwether. As Republican candidate Glenn Youngkin's campaign hypes improving poll numbers, Democrats are trying to chip away at his support in strongholds for the GOP. During the past week, Virginians have been targeted
with ads on Facebook, Instagram, Google, and Snapchat questioning Youngkin's commitment to the Second Amendment. They're the work of a new political group called Accountability Virginia PAC. Its website says nothing about the individuals or organizations behind it. While the NRA backed Donald Trump, they refused to endorse Glenn Youngkin. We can't trust Glenn Youngkin on guns, one of the ads says. Public records show the PAC has spent more than $25,000 on ads, which have been viewed between 1 and 5 million times. While clearly designed to hit Youngkin from the right, all indications point to Democrats behind the PAC. Accountability Virginia's online donation page is hosted by the Democratic fundraising platform Act Blue. Its bank account is at Amalgamated Bank, a labor union-owned financial institution popular with Democratic political groups. The PAC was incorporated in Virginia by compliance consultants at the MBA Consulting Group, which works uniformly with Democrats. Its ads on Snapchat were purchased by Gambit Strategies, a firm founded this year by the Biden presidential campaign digital director and the former head of the Democrat Super PAC Priorities USA. False information is prevalent on the internet, Gambit's website warns. Research shows time and time again that the best way to combat false negative information is to provide people positive information about a candidate, cause, etc. Neither Gambit nor MBA consultants responded to requests for information. The ads are spread across Western Virginia, the Republican part of the state, through the Appalachian Mountains. So the Democrats are pretending to be Republicans to try to convince Republicans to not vote for Glenn Youngkin, the Republican candidate, and instead hand it to Terry McAuliffe. That shows the Democrats are nervous about Virginia. It shows that moving forward, we're going to see more and more of this stuff. Democrats are going to start running ads. You know, back in Georgia, in the runoff for Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue, a Democrat group bought billboards around the state of Georgia. And all the billboard said was, it was stolen. They're going to steal it again. And in fact, Republican voters, particularly in the northern part of Georgia, they believed it. You had the chairman of the Georgia Republican Party telling people that the election had been stolen. They were going to steal it again. You had Marjorie Taylor Greene, the congresswoman from North Georgia, saying it was stolen. They were going to steal it again. You had the president of the United States at the time, Donald Trump, telling people it was stolen. They were going to steal it again. 427,205 Republicans believed him, didn't show up. John Ossoff won his Senate race by 97,000 votes. 427,205 Republicans who had voted in the general did not show up. What's absurd is, one, that both parties do this to each other. The Democrats, more so ever since Claire McCaskill beat Todd Akin, have done this as a campaign strategy. What's more absurd is that there are idiots who believe this stuff. But there are a lot of idiots. People are stupid. And every election season, you're reminded of how stupid people can be. So in Virginia, Democrats are pretending to be Republicans to try to convince Republicans to not vote for the Republican who is pro-gun because they claim that he's not supported by the NRA. Therefore, he must be a closet liberal, as opposed to Terry McAuliffe, who's Bill and Hillary Clinton's friend. But they're doing their best. They're doing their best. Now, here's what I actually think is going to happen. I actually think McAuliffe's going to win. I know I'm not supposed to say this. You're supposed to rah-rah, cheerlead. It's almost October. There's a month away. Early voting's already happened. But just bear with me here. Northern Virginia has trended so overwhelmingly Democrat in the past number of years. It is the population center of Virginia. It is basically mini California. So if you have massive turnout everywhere else in Virginia and it all goes Republican, then I guess the Republican can win. But I'm not sure that's going to happen. I'm just not sure. Now, I will be pleasantly surprised. And, you know, being a pessimist, I'm never disappointed. But here's what I think is going to happen. Maybe we need to flag this. And you know what? I will gladly eat crow if I'm wrong. I hope Glenn Youngkin wins. I really do. That the race is as close as it is a good sign. The Washington Post local coverage has yet to kick in and character assassinate Glenn Youngkin. I expect that'll happen probably next week.
But what's going to happen is Terry McAuliffe will win, and it will be close. In a state that's been trending Democrat, in a state that is overwhelmingly the northern edge of the state, hyper-Democrat and partisan, it's going to be closer than it should be. And instead of pointing out that a state like Virginia that has trended solidly blue, where the Democrats are now in control statewide, it should not have been as close as it is, the Democrats and their friends in the media are going to say, oh my gosh, Terry McAuliffe, they were so nervous the White House was sweating bullets, and yet they won. It's okay. The midterms will be fine, guys. Don't worry about it. It's going to be fine. And, you know, there's this bubble of coverage that benefits the Democrats. The Democrats get in this bubble of coverage, and they'll believe their press. They always believe their press. And they'll start to relax about next year. Maybe they'll even get together and they will raise taxes. Maybe they'll do all the stuff they've said they want to do. And they'll think, gosh, you know, if Glenn Youngkin, he couldn't pull it off from Virginia, they're not going to be able to pull it off anywhere. Stacey Abrams is going to get elected in Georgia. We're going to get the Republicans to throw away Brian Kemp. We're going to get them to betray Brian Kemp. We're going to get Greg Abbott. We're going to get Beto elected in Texas over Greg Abbott. We're going to get Charlie Crist elected in Florida over Ron DeSantis. We're going to win because we won Northern Virginia, and therefore we won Virginia. The problem will be for the Democrats that they may win Virginia because of Northern Virginia, but when they've lost pretty much the rest of the state, other than that hardcore progressive population center in Northern Virginia, they got problems. They've got real problems. The fact that it's close a month away in Virginia, even if the Republicans lose, that the Democrats are starting to panic about it, is a pretty telling sign. The fact that Democrats are having to run ads to try to suppress the Republican vote in Western Virginia is a pretty telling sign that the Democrats are nervous about Virginia and nervous about the warning signs it could send. And it's also pretty telling that if they do these things, they're going to misread what actually happened. Here's a political story. This is headline. People are going to get skittish. White House sweats over McAuliffe. President Joe Biden can't afford Terry McAuliffe to lose the governor's race in Virginia, and the White House knows it. It's a scenario the president and his aides and close allies increasingly view as a real possibility, given tightening poll numbers in the race and signs of Democratic apathy. The White House, Democratic National Committee, and outside partners are closely coordinating their efforts and speaking almost every day, according to three people familiar with the dynamic. Just over a month before Election Day, they're planning to ramp up activity and engagement in addition to the $5 million the DNC has already budgeted for Virginia, one of the people said. They know what's at stake. A loss to Republican Glenn Youngkin in the off-cycle governor's race could set off a domino effect, with Democrats panicked and thinking it's 2009 all over again, the year they last lost the state's gubernatorial race, followed by a wipeout in Congress. Democrats fear the party will lose faith in the idea that Biden's agenda will help boost their electoral prospects, that they'll fret about his broader handling of COVID-19, and even question the embrace of vaccine mandates as an electoral cudgel after it found favor with large swaths of Americans. A source familiar with the White House's thinking said officials always anticipated a close race, noting Biden himself suggested so when he stumped for McAuliffe in July. Among their concerns are the number of undecided voters in the contest, said another source familiar with conversations. Virginia has trended Democrat in recent years. Biden won it by 10 points. Biden won it against Trump by 10 points. If McAuliffe wins it by 1 or 2 points, the Democrats are going to breathe a sigh of relief, and that's actually the problem for them. Everybody expects Terry McAuliffe to win. They're trying to rewrite it right now, thinking he's going to win, so they go, oh, it was such a surprise. We didn't know he was going to win. Oh, it was so close. Y'all, come on. I've been around the block. So have you.
McAuliffe should win Virginia, given it has trended Democrat for 10 straight years. Republicans last won the governor's mansion in 2009. It should be a Democrat state by now. Republicans have tried to win it back to no avail because Northern Virginia is so dominantly progressive. Republicans have even been wiped out on the state legislature in Northern Virginia. If it's close, those are the warning bells. If it's a win for Youngkin, it's positively doom for the Democrats. And that's what the Democrats are freaked out about. If it's close, they may publicly be boastful and say, oh, well, we didn't think we'd do it and we pulled it off. That's a good warning sign for, that's a good sign for the midterm. No. It shouldn't be close at all. If it's close, those are your warning signs. If it's a Youngkin win, it's doom and destruction for the Democrats across the United States. Why? Because it shows that the Democratic anger that fueled them for 2018 and 2020 has dissipated, and now it's the Republican backlash. Our national politics these days are defined by a series of backlashes of voters going from one extreme to the other. The irony here is that Youngkin is like the least extreme person possible to run as a Republican in Virginia, and yet the Democrats are trying to paint him as one. You know, he could get in 2009 and a lot of those Northern Virginia guys say, you know what? This guy's not so bad after all. Maybe the Republicans aren't the way we believe they were. Nah, they'll still hate him. But the fact is, it shouldn't be this close and it is. And that's why the Democrats should be panicked. And I'm afraid for the Democrats and good for all of us that if it is close and McAuliffe still wins, the Democrats will say, we should have lost that and we won. Everything's hunky-dory. And that's going to set them up for the surprise of the century when they get to 2022 and think they got it in the bag. You should. So I got to play you a clip. The president yesterday got his booster shot. And in getting his booster shot, reporters yelled questions at him. He tried to run away, but did say one thing.
How many Americans need to be vaccinated for us to go back to normal? Like, what is the percentage of total vaccinations that have to be deployed?
Well, I think, I think we get the vast majority, like it's going on in some industries and some schools, 97, 98%. I think we're got awful close. But I'm not the scientist. But one thing for sure, a quarter of the country can't go unvaccinated, and us not continue to have a problem.
Why? He wants 97 to 98% of Americans to be vaccinated before we go back to normal. It's never going to happen. They keep telling us that there's a pandemic of the unvaccinated. You know, all the data shows that the unvaccinated are living their best lives now. It's the vaccinated people who are freaked out. The burden of risk is on the unvaccinated at this point. Let them live their best life now. And if they get COVID, well, they may go to the hospital. They may die, but they chose. A lot of people have chosen not to get the vaccine because they've already had COVID and their antibodies are so high, they don't think they need it. And by the way, if they think it, that and it's wrong, it's the government's own mixed messaging that has led them to conclude that's the case. And no one in the government is disabused of that. I mean, a lot of the problems here are government messaging problems. They are problems of a bureaucracy that has been too arrogant to admit when it's wrong and walk things back and rethink things. Can't really blame people for having to arrive at their own conclusions when the government keeps flip-flopping on stuff. And yes, part of it is the virus was so new, we learned a lot of stuff along the way, but now we should be fairly consistent because of all we know, and we're still, the government is not. It's contradicting itself. So saying that we can't go back to normal unless 98% of us are vaccinated is absurd, and there's going to be hell to pay for that.